time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago. Time for Abandoned Manitoba, and we are continuing our conversation about the rise and today the fall of fish stations in our province. Gordon Goldsborough joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadia.
Remind us what we talked about last week.
Last week, we talked about commercial fishing on the large lakes in Manitoba, and specifically about a place called Good Harbour Fish Station that operated on the west shore of Lake Winnipegosis from 1962 until it closed in 1996.
And what was life like on this harbour?
I know about its daily routine from my friend Shelley Metkowski, who actually lived at Good Harbour from 1965 until the early 1980s. And what she told me is that every day from the third week of July till the third week of September, what they called the summer fishing season, her dad, along with another seven fishers, would go out with their boats. They would deploy the nets. They would bring up the nets that had fish in them, load the fish into their boats, bring them back, and then do the processing. So if you do the math, that works out to about probably 40 to 50 people living at Good Harbour. By the time you include all of the fishers and their hired help, by the time you include the families that would have also lived there. And according to Shelley, it was really an ethnically diverse place. Shelley's family was Ukrainian and Swedish, but she said there were also Icelanders there. There were Métis, Cree, Soto. She learned quite a few indigenous words, for example, just interacting with the kids that were living there with her. So they would arrive back after leaving very early in the morning. They would spend the rest of the day sort of dressing and packing the fish, drying and mending the nets, and preparing basically for the next day's work. And then every day, a semi-truck would arrive to pick up the boxes of iced fish for delivery to Winnipeg. And of course, the other aspect of it is the men all needed to be fed. And so Shelley's mother, for example, made meals for her husband and for his hired hands, as well as the family. So it was really, in a very true sense, a very thriving community.
Well, very bustling, very busy. Then what led to its abandonment?
Well, in a word, overfishing. So, for instance, we have statistics from 1946 to 1964. There were about 500 commercial fishers around Lake Winnipegosis, and they were catching a variety of species of fish, including things like whitefish, tulipy, suckers, sauger, pike, pickerel. But the prized catch, the one that they really wanted to catch, was called pickerel, sometimes also called walleye. Each year, these fishers would remove from Lake Winnipegosis 1 million pounds of pickerel. I mean, that's a pretty large number. Unfortunately, starting in 1964, the annual pickerel catch began to decrease to about 250,000 pounds by the late 1960s. And by the early 1970s, only 100,000 pounds. In other words, roughly one-tenth of the traditional catch. You know, it went that quickly from, you know, only a course of about 20 years, the catch plummeted down to one-tenth. And of course, that is noteworthy because not only was there less fish being caught, there were fewer fishers involved. So it went from 500 fishers down to only 300. And you think it's probably an indication there's simply something going on here. And so in 1975, a provincial task force was formed to examine the basis for this decline and then to recommend ways of restoring the fishery.
So was this the first time that Manitoba's commercial fisheries had declined?
No. In fact, summer commercial fishing on Lake Manitoba has actually been banned since 1905, over 100 years ago, basically over concerns of overfishing.
What determines how many fish are caught by a fisher?
The key seems to be the size of the mesh in the net. So if you take a net and pull it tight so that you collapse the mesh in the nets, you measure the distance from side to side of that collapsed net. And so a 3-inch mesh, for example, would be 3 inches across that part of the net. And so typically, a small mesh net typically catches young fish. A larger mesh net catches large fish. So if you're trying to preserve the fishery, of course, you want to preserve the young fish because they're the ones who are going to grow to mature, who are going to sustain your population. So you want to avoid using small mesh nets because that would deplete the fishery. So today, fishers on Lake Manitoba, for example, use a mesh size of 3 3/4 inches, Those on Lake Winnipegosis use a 4-inch mesh, and on Lake Winnipeg, they use nets varying in size depending on where they are, from 3¾ upwards. And that's sort of the minimum size they think is desirable to avoid depleting the fishery.
Have there been any efforts made to restore fisheries?
Yeah, well, in Lake Winnipegosis, for example, this task force published a list of 27 recommendations for restoring the fishery, and among them was a recommendation to basically close the summer fishery for 3 years, starting in 1977, to allow the fish stocks to replenish. And then in that time, the fishers would be offered alternative fishing opportunities, they would be compensated financially, provided with other job income. And they held public meetings to investigate the receptiveness of the fishers to these recommendations. They had a meeting, for example, in Dauphin, where they put the idea of closing the fishery, and it was resoundingly rejected. 31 out of the 32 fishers said absolutely no. And in fact, they even suggested that maybe the fishers should take over the management of the lake from the provincial government. How that would benefit, I'm not entirely clear about. But ultimately, the provincial government chose not to close the fishery at that time, I guess because of the pushback that they had. So instead, they took one of the other recommendations and implemented it. They raised the minimum mesh size from 4 to 4¼ inches. And you don't think that would make a lot of difference, but it did. Fish could be caught, at least the smaller fish, and that would hopefully let the fish populations come back. Of course, the fishers weren't happy about that either, because it meant they had to go buy new nets, because the other nets were of the smaller size, and they would catch fewer fish in those nets. So you paid more to get less, and they weren't happy about that.
So what did they do?
Well, it wasn't even successful. They did implement the larger mesh size, and so by the mid-1980s, the fishery was still depressed, and at that point, they did implement a closure. So for 3 years, from 1986 to 1988, so the summer fishery on Lake Winnipegosis was closed. And during that time, they stocked the lake with over 2 million pickerel fingerlings to try to resupply the population. They bought back fishing licenses. They basically said, we'll pay you to give back your license so you won't fish anymore. They reduced the number of licenses from 48 down to 28 in hopes of reducing it. And so when they did reopen the fishery in 88, yeah, they were catching really good catches again, and they were quite pleased that the results, they thought the fishery had rebounded. But ultimately, the fish station at Good Harbor did close. So it wasn't simply overfishing that brought it to its end.
So the Good Harbor Fish Station closed due to a decline of the fishery.
Yeah, but there was a second reason. The final blow, so to speak, came in August of 1996 when the facility was badly damaged in a tornado. And they said the boats were all thrown around, the buildings were badly damaged, and I think that was the point at which they decided, given all the difficulty in fishing and all that, they would just close the facility. And so, I was there a few weeks ago, and I found almost no evidence of the infrastructure that had once been there. It was a thriving community. That big 5,000 square foot building was gone. The concrete floor, usually they leave behind concrete floors, because it's just too hard to tear them up. It was gone. In fact, I really had to look to find any evidence that there had ever been anything there. The dredged harbor I found, the docks were all gone. I saw a couple of foundations from some of the bungalows. For example, the house where my friend's family had lived was still there. There was some assorted garbage, but the road into it, well, last year I'm told you wouldn't even be able to get in there at all. This year, because it's a little drier, I got in there, but I needed a four-wheel drive vehicle. So, it's gone really back to nature in a very real way.
So what happened to all those fishes?
I suspect that many of them just went on to other things. They left the fishing industry. Some of them may have moved elsewhere to fish, but the fact of the matter is that I think the closure of that fish station at Good Harbor was probably a good thing for the fishery on Lake Winnipegosis, because with fewer fishers operating, there's going to be fewer fish being caught, less pressure on the fish stocks in the lake.
How do you think a story like this resonates even today?
We still, of course, talk about what constitutes overfishing, and whether or not fishing is a long-term sustainable thing. So, for instance, there are people talking today about the fishing on Lake Winnipeg, and the fishers, by all accounts, are catching record numbers of fish. But is that the beginnings of a decline, perhaps? The provincial government is buying back quotas on Lake Winnipeg right now, and they're talking about a process called eco-certification, where they have to certify the fishery as being sustainable to get this label, and then they can put on a package of fish. If you go to the store and buy a fish, that you can know that it's taken in a way that is sustainable. And so there's a lot of concern these days about the long-term health of commercial fishing in this province and elsewhere.
Gordon, thank you so much for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
What's the clue for next week?
Well, you know, all too often I hear about historical documents like scrapbooks, photos, papers that end up in the trash because a family doesn't know what to do with them. They don't want to keep them themselves, but they don't know what to do with them. So next week I thought we're going to talk about, you know, maybe more productive ways to deal with these important family mementos.
Like arts and crafts?
Maybe.
Is that what we're going to do? I'll bring my scissors and my glue. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba.